Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome back and welcome to the second part of the Sci-fi party line turd off.
Oh, we're still here.
I'm your hostess Kat. That's your host Carl. And we're gonna what the turd off is, if you're new, is that we every year boil down the worst films, the worst sci-fi films of that year, and we tell you which one is the ultimate turd.
And we haven't even gotten to them yet. We haven't even gotten to them yet.
No. So let's go ahead and continue, because what we're doing is we're discussing the films that happened in 2016, and we're kind of explaining to you how we like them and why they're kind of not turds. So we have to, you know, explain what are not turds, why they're not turds. Some of them were really turdy, like the ones we discussed at the top of the last episode, but no one saw them. So
yeah. All right. So where are we going? What genre are we still doing? Superheroes right now? What are we doing?
You know what? Let's stay in superheroes just for one more film. Right. Well, I didn't see Doctor Strange, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't a turd.
Oh, no, it was great. Yeah. I enjoyed Doctor Strange.
I needed to see it, but I had had my fill of superhero films, and I wanted to see it because I'm watching Sherlock right now. And I was like, you know what? You like Cumberbatch. Girl, go see that film. What you talking about? So I'll see
you. You should.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So I didn't see Cumberbatch. Captain America Civil War.
Okay. Well, of course, I liked that one. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, maybe not as novel as some of the others, but as so many Marvel films are about now, they're setting us up for some really cool stuff in the future. So I like to see the characters. You know, I definitely like the Spider-Man. I'm looking forward to seeing
Spider-Man. Are we on to a third Spider-Man?
Seriously. That's where we are with Spider-Man now. So, the origin story, you looking forward to seeing that? Do you wonder how Spider-Man came to be?
See Spider-Man's grandparents get killed one more time, if I have to see Batman's parents get killed one more time, God damn it, I've seen Bruce Wayne's parents killed so many times that I'm traumatized.
I'm just saying. So, you know, if you're going to be bringing somebody in, do it in a new way.
I'm sick of Spider-Man. We've already done I thought this last Spider-Man, second Spider-Man, was the Spider-Man. Like Tobey Maguire, he was garbage. But this second Spider-Man, that guy.
Really, you liked him? You liked him? I didn't like that guy.
The second one?
The most recent one. Garfield. Andrew Garfield?
I didn't dislike him.
I was less than thrilled with him. I
thought he was supposed to be the golden child of Spider-Man.
Well, that's what they wanted him to be, but he turned out to be
the Brandon Ruth of Spider-Man, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. That's the best way. That is very true.
I maintain that Superman, what was it? I liked that film. So I think Brandon Ralph or Ruth got the bad end of the stick because his career was over with that one film, and he was mismanaged. It was not Baby's fault. It was not his fault.
I will say that they did not do a lot with the characters in that one.
I mean, Kevin Spacey was even bad.
I know.
How
was
that even possible?
I was dying to see. Kevin Spacey is a perfect Lex Luthor. He is a perfect
Lex Luthor in that
Game of Cards or whatever
that is. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It was before that. I could see it in him. He was clearly Lex Luthor. And what they did with him is the same thing they did with poor Brandon. It was just like the environment they screwed him. So,
he had a look. He had a temper. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, how did we go and get passionate about Brandon Ruth when we're talking about Captain America Civil War? I don't know.
You're so desperately trying to find something.
Bucky and his hair.
Bucky was cool. Black Panther was great. I actually did like this new young Spider-Man, so I'm looking forward to seeing. I like him. And his nutty connection with Iron Man. Those two are going to be fun to see together. I thought it was a good pairing.
I agree with that. I think that is the only reason that I'm excited about a Spider-Man film is because Iron Man and his smart ass will be just the comments alone.
He's going to be the adult supervision in this movie. So that is that.
Wasn't he supposed to be the adult supervision in American? I can't even say this film. Civil War. Let's just go Civil War. I'm not going to say Captain America anymore because I obviously don't know how to say America anymore. So Civil War. What he was supposed to be the adult super. So Batman versus Superman and Civil War had a theme in common, and that was superheroes needed to be babysat. Pretty much.
Well, superheroes pitted against each other is what we were talking about here.
Well, no, because the thing is they were pitted against each other, but they were pitted against each other because one thought they should be free and one thought that they should conform. And it was odd to me that because of the mess that Iron Man made in the previous movie, you know what I mean? He was the one preaching to the choir, like, we need to follow the rules and blurty, blur, blur. When you literally just fucked up a whole bunch of bullshit in the last film.
Okay, now that made sense to me because you have to look at why, what the nature of their control is. All right, that piece, I was upset to watch Iron Man going up against Captain America because I like them both, and I like them both for different reasons. But their anger and their frustration made sense to me. Here's why. Iron Man, Tony Stark, has always come from sort of like a fearful place. That has been the core of his spirit. He's been about defense. He's been about, trying to fight in support of like weaponry and a strong offense is the best defense. He's come from that kind of a place. So there's not a lot of room for trust in the world of Iron Man. He literally builds a suit of armor around things to protect it. And the fact that you are locked in a piece of iron is perfectly fine for Tony as long as you are defended. You look at Captain America, and he has always been about absolute, genuine, not just freedom, but trust. He's been about, letting people show you who they are and giving you a chance. And he was a hero before he had all of his powers. So when you look at where they were coming from in the movie, it makes total sense, including Tony's mistake from the previous film, which is he's trying to inflict safety on people with shields.
That's nice.
And it's the nature of who he is. He's got that, fearful core. And so that all makes sense. And you go to Captain America, he's absolute liberty for everyone because he believes at your core, you're good. And he believes that if you give people a chance, they will become good. And so that's the nature of their whole, dilemma. And, it got exaggerated because of, mental superpowers and whatnot in one film or another. And, of course, Tony being scared to death of space whales and all of that craziness. It goes in different directions. But at its core, that's what's going on with those two. So that made sense to me. I totally bought the trouble and the conflict that came.
But
I didn't want to see it. I'm tired of this kind of look. We got this kind of conflict in our country going on right now. Can't even our superheroes get along? I just want to see some happiness and some joy for a damn change. So that's Marvel has a delicate and expert way of doing it. It was hard to watch, but it was still interesting, and in a lot of ways, it was enjoyable to me. Batman versus Superman, it was just pain. It was just pain. It was hard. But heroes that I like getting jacked up, acting irrationally, and there not being a whole lot of sense as to why. That's what broke my heart about it. Oh, and by the way, last cast, Spike Jonze did Her is what I was trying to say, not Ex Machina. So when you watch Her, you know, there's a lot of pain.
That was a good one.
It was a good movie, but you know, but you could feel this sort of like underlying betrayal and sadness throughout and loneliness throughout the whole freaking film. That's, you know, that's the same kind of
but
thing.
But that's what he was trying to get at. I mean, I think that was expertly done.
Yes, but it can be tiring. It can be tiring.
Oh, and like Battlestar Galactica for 4 or 5 years was not exhausted. Oh, yeah, you were exhausted. That was me and you. Yeah,
I was exhausted. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, right.
Yeah, you're right.
So anyway, so there you go. That's Superman. I mean,
Civil War.
Civil War.
What did we learn in that film? Because I felt like it was kind of okay. I was really impressed that Captain America kicked a whole bunch of ass in a pair of khakis.
Well, if anyone could. If anyone could.
I was just like, I don't know what made me think, because you know, I always look at clothes or whatever. But because I know in Avengers or something like that, he kicked a whole bunch of ass in a pair of Levi's. And because I was doing this big research on Levi's or whatever, so I noticed that. And this time I was like, let me see what he's doing. And he's just like, he's defending the world, kicking ass, doing all this shit in a pair of khakis. That's America right there.
He's chilling. That's right. All he was missing was like some Converse or Chucks. That would have just rounded out the set. Yeah.
Oh my God, that was nice. Black Panther thing, you knew his dad was going to die because, oh, if it's not somebody's mom or grandparents, somebody's parents is going to die. And that's how they
origin.
Become a Superman.
Yeah, origin.
Yeah. So speaking of Black Panther, apparently every black person
ain't nobody left. And we the only ones left that are not cast.
We're gonna get a phone call, and like Carl and Kat is gonna be in this film as well.
We're ready. We are ready. We'll be the crazy technicians in the background someplace. We'll do it. So I don't know.
I swear to God, every black person ever.
Yeah. So it's good. I mean, seriously, Hollywood is making up for it in one single film.
One film. Like, what is the screen time per actor? I mean,
Sidney Poitier and James Earl Jones are the only ones left. And they're like, we know we're getting the call. We're just waiting. Yeah, they're going to be in it. I'm telling you right now. God. Somehow they're going to get them in there.
So funny to me, but you know, I'm gonna see it. But wow.
they ain't playing. There's no joke. That is gonna be some black folk. No joke.
That's gonna make some money. What else? Civil War. I mean, I guess because it's not fresh on his. But I have a feeling that maybe Eric wasn't. And I'm sorry, Eric. You should be here. I love you. And he's upset that he can't do Turd Off. Because it's a Carl and Kat thing, so it's our tradition. We have to do it this way.
Years,
7 years. This is the 7th annual Turd Off. By the way,
holy crap! Why? Yeah. Why do we keep putting ourselves? All right, go on.
I don't know. It was rough. This is almost didn't happen this year. It didn't happen in 2016, but
and it still hasn't yet.
Okay, fine. Okay, so I'm just trying to, yeah, it was a big film. Captain America, I think, had the biggest budget of all of the film. Captain America and Batman versus Superman had the same budget.
All right.
$250 million.
All right.
They both made their money back. Civil War made domestic $408 million. Batman only made $330 million. Now, worldwide, Captain America made the most money at $1,153 million.
Holy crap.
So it made a ton of cash.
But then again, you know, internationally, Batman versus Superman squeaked in at merely 800 some million, you know, that's not bad.
But no one, I think, still these films, while good, they still didn't do as good as Deadpool.
Yeah,
Deadpool
made
6 times. Yeah.
No doubt.
That is impressive. That movie didn't feel that cheap.
No, it didn't.
Well, I guess it it was cheap because they were like, Ryan Reynolds was like, you're the only two superheroes in a film about superheroes. It's it was like hilarious. They can only afford the two of you.
He even made fun of it in the film. I mean, it was just genius. It was just genius.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, I'm disappointed that we don't have anything more passionate to say about Civil War. And I think maybe because it's just been so long.
It's been a long time, but I enjoyed it, bottom line. It was good.
It was good, but I don't think that we don't have any strong feelings about it either way. I mean, is that...
Yeah, it felt to me like they were setting us up for something else.
To get on with the gauntlet.
That's true.
Yeah, because that's what I'm. I think that's what I'm going to be excited about. Because they keep teasing me, and I don't like to be teased. I like to get on in there and get it on. You know what I mean?
All right, I got the maple syrup, baby. Here we go.
Okay.
Oh, Canada.
That's super embarrassing right now. Okay, so I'm not going to force a Civil War. We're going to cross that off the list. So I'm going to do, you're going to yell at me, but I want to, since we're doing superheroes, I want to end with a superhero one because we still have a few more to go, but that's the last of the superhero ones. And I have to say it is X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, you don't have no idea what you're doing here, but okay, great. Yes, X-Men Apocalypse was in there. Yes, yes.
We saw that this year. That was a 2016 thing. You know what? I saw this one last week. And you know what? I enjoyed it more than X-Men Days of Future Past when they were with like the old, like Patrick Stewart and whatever. To me, the Patrick Stewart, it was...
Oh, wait. Oh, are you talking about the third one of the original X-Men? I get them confused. So
where both the cast met up in one film.
Oh, so it was the set. Okay, all right.
I don't know what number it was. It was just that one.
All right.
So whatever that one was, it tried to be good, and I wanted to like it, but it had too much going on. It was exhausting. I remember being tired and falling asleep on that one, and I was just like, man, this is a lot. I can't keep up what's happening. What's with the time? What is Halle Berry? Oh, Patrick. Oh, no, we got the young folks here again. What? Why is this? I mean, it felt like it should have been really cool, like TNG meeting TOS in one film. You know what I mean? That's what it was supposed to feel like, but it didn't quite do that. So that's
all right.
That's fine. That's
fine. I am not going to say that I liked Apocalypse more than X-Men Days of Future Past. I am not going to say that.
I am that guy today, and I will say that I enjoyed it because, A, it didn't exhaust me, and I thought I liked it. It felt more like, what was the one where they were on the beach? The film, what was the X-Men? First Class. It was First Class. So this one... Oh. First Class. It felt like First Class to me, and how much I enjoyed First Class. Why did it feel like First Class?
Because it was the sequel to First Class. That's why.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say it's why it felt more First Classy than the others.
I'm sorry. Let me say my good things, and then you can explain to me why your opinion is your opinion. But I'm going to say that, I don't know, I enjoyed it. I was confused that the bad guy kind of remind me of the bad guy in freaking Guardian of the Galaxy, but whatever.
He looked like the bad guy every damn movie of the past 10 years. It was
Skeletor type. Anyway.
Yeah, Skeletor. I forgot. He doesn't look like Skeletor. All right. Same color scheme.
So
I'll get you, He-Man. Oh, sorry. I just love the Skeletor.
Or floating around and shit. Okay. You know, they got a show coming out called Man at Arms, and it's not about the He-Man character.
That's a ripoff. That's a shame. Yeah. That is just terrible. Because Man at Arms needs his own spin-off.
Right?
If anyone needs a show, it's Man at
Arms. That was my dude. Anyway,
totally underutilized character.
Man, I love that guy. Anyway.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Anyway. So what are we talking about? Oh,
X-Men Apocalypse.
So I liked What did I like about this film? I like that Storm was Storm. To me, this was a better Storm. She was better than Halle Berry. Like, everybody was bitching and moaning about Halle Berry. And then we got a more Storm. Okay, well, guys, you can never please you people. And anyway, let me finish.
Hurry up.
Okay, fine. I was a little bored with Magneto being the bad guy again.
Sorta again.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, there we go, Auschwitz again. Come on, guy. Why are you trying to make me freaking cry with this again? Like, that's one of the hardest parts of history. Just don't be throwing it out there like that all the time, man. You're fucking killing me. But sensitive about that. Anyway, I don't know. I think they lean on it too much. I don't know. It was a bit much, but
and unnecessary, really.
Carl, you'll get to Rage Against the Machine in a minute. Let me finish. Okay, so I enjoyed Professor X and his message of hope and everything. I enjoyed how they, you know, how his mind was connected to everything, and how the quote unquote bad guy used that against him. To me, it felt like a metaphor for the internet. Like, when the internet was new or whatever, it was a really cool place that, you know, your mom wasn't on it. And, you know, like, politicians and stuff were scared of it. And it was just like a whole bunch of geeky people just talking about TV shows or special interests. We all had a code. It felt like it was still the Wild West, and there were still trolls and negative or whatever. But it was just like smaller. And it was like there was a like mind there almost. Maybe I'm just making this up. That's how it felt to me. Right. Then somebody took the internet that was supposed to be for connecting people around the world and sharing ideas and making humanity great. And now the internet is a cesspool of misery and hacking and messing with elections and releasing emails and all this other type of bull crap that you don't like. Freaking child abuse, and it feels like it's miserable. Now I sound like old lady, I know, but to me it feels like, I was just thinking about this the other day, like the internet to me felt like this really cool place at one time where whatever, and now it feels like we were too naive in releasing such a powerful thing, because when bad people got a hold to it, they use it for evil and not for good, and we're too trusting, and now we release the monster. And you can't unring this bell. I'm almost done, Carl. I'm almost done.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I had nodded off for a second there. Please go on. I'm sorry.
Fuck
go.
Fuck you. Anyway. So, okay. I also liked the origin story of Scott. Who? Scott.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I feel like maybe we knew this or whatever, but I forgot about the brother or whatever. And that was a cool story. I liked Jean Grey. I liked her, how she saved the day at the end, where she had so much emotion in her that release and all that is what kind of took down
the Phoenix.
Right. Because it just feels like everybody has a little bit of Phoenix in you, and like every day you're just holding back all of that. But if you were to release all that rage on the planet, that MFs would get hurt. You know what I'm saying? But you just keep it down. You try to keep it at bay or whatever. And it just feels like, I really like that. I related to that. Jennifer, Jennifer, what's her name?
In every movie we've seen, yeah. Passengers, right?
So she was the hero.
Lawrence.
Yes. Jennifer Lawrence. She's Mystique. And that's she was basically Katniss, but blue.
Yeah.
That's that thing. You know, there it is. Not saying I'm tired of her or I don't like her or anything, but there's a point. It's a lot. So Carl has been chomping at the bit. He's been very respectful. And now I'm going to shut up and let Carl explain to me how this wasn't. I mean, I thought it was just, it was fine. I mean, it wasn't my favorite, but it was fine. I enjoyed it. And here we go.
I think it's the proportions that's the problem. The stuff that you mentioned is actually not bad. And I'll give you that. But we have to look at it proportional to this story. First of all, Apocalypse felt like someone had just taken about 5-6 random movies and glued them together. Okay, and if you and I mean with no transition or anything, just jammed them together. The beginning of the movie.
Oh yeah,
you're watching Stargate. All right, then it became The Mummy. Then, for some reason, you know, Professor X's girlfriend straight up looked like Scully. She's walking through a tomb where she's got a flashlight. So now it's an X-Files episode. Then they take us back. For a moment, it becomes Days of Future Past, or not that one, the 70s version of X-Men. So we saw
First Class. We saw
a little bit of First Class, and then it became something. It was just, like every 20 minutes, this became a different movie. And that is weird. That is really, really weird to watch. I mean, seriously, because you're trying to attach yourself to the characters, or you're trying to get comfortable with the flow. You said, you know, the other X-Men movie was jumping around and you felt exhausted. Apocalypse exhausted me because it just kept moving in places. The characters that you were least interested in had the most screen time. What's the guy's name? Darkseid. What was the villain's name? See, I can't even remember the villain in this movie.
Skeletor.
Yeah, Skeletor's cronies. He had his four horsemen, right?
Yeah.
Storm was one, and I don't think they have gotten Storm right yet on X-Men.
Closer.
Only because she was angry, but that is not. Storm is strong, and she is strong-willed, and she's independent. To see Storm portrayed as this following along teenage girl, just trying to, you know, kowtow to this dude, and only in the very, very, very end does she start to turn around. That is not Storm. I'm sorry. It just they haven't gotten her right. So anyway, so of the four horsemen, she was supposedly the most interesting. Magneto became Vader at the end of Jedi for the fourth freaking time in an X-Men movie. You know, how many times do we have to watch Professor going, I feel the good in you. No, I don't want to be good. And you know, have Magneto devastate whole towns, everybody's friend, killing off people, only to, at the last minute, come back around. How many times? So, okay, there's a second horseman we knocked out. Then, what's her wing dude? No.
Devil Angel.
Yeah, is that what his name is?
Maybe.
Did he say anything in this movie?
I thought, and he was like, if you don't fight, they will kill us.
Wow. That was the first 20 minutes of the film, and that was the most important thing he said in the whole freaking
film. He had metal wings, though.
This is a special effect and not a character, okay? I'm just pointing that out. And these dudes are just hanging around sucking up screen time.
Olivia Munn, though, which said nothing. Oh my God.
Psylocke. What was wrong with Psylocke? Okay, look. I actually like Olivia Munn. I think, you know, certain films and things, I really liked her in what was that? The television
Ride Along 2.
What? No. Well, what was that one that she was in, that the newsroom program? Anyway, I like her.
Oh, I didn't like her in that.
I did not like her as Psylocke.
I can't figure
why. Why did you like
her? She looked so cool.
You liked her look in it?
Yeah.
I thought her costume, out of all of the costumes in this movie, there was something wrong with it. Was like everybody else had like the professional costume, had the, you know, the cutting edge, the state of the art, the, you know, multi-$1,000 costume, and she had like the local convention version of it. I'm, I mean, you know, she was kind of hot and all, but I'm just sorry. Her look, everybody else's costume had so much more to it, and something about her, it was like it didn't quite fit right, or Psylocke bothered me in the extreme in this movie. I don't think that Munn pulled off the mean, sinister darkness of Psylocke and imposingness of Psylocke enough to make it believable. And then on top of that, it was just her, like I said, there's something about her costume that just did not match up to everybody else's in the film. It's weird. So no, Psylocke. So, okay, so that's them. They are supposed to be the dark, you know, bringers.
The four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yeah, this dude's name's Apocalypse. Why could the four horsemen of the apocalypse? They were the most boring, uninteresting. I mean, they were barely henchmen. What did they do with Silverwing? Seriously, did he do anything to anybody?
So when he was dying in the film, he was in an airplane and he went down in an airplane. The guy with wings went down in the airplane and died because he was in an airplane and he went down.
I didn't even know the lame irony of that. That is horrible.
And then Psylocke, she kind of went out.
She just slunk away.
Jumped out and then like...
Oh, you mean how she got out of the plane?
Yeah. So yeah. I'm just trying to figure out how a guy who flies stayed at the helm of an airplane and died in the crash of the...
Well, Psylocke has her purple stabby stuff. So she was able to slice her way down the side of a building to break the fall.
Think that wings trump a purple saber.
I would say that in a normal, in a rational space, but we are talking about this movie. So anyway, so that's the villains. That's the cavalcade of bad guys that we have in here. Now, if we look at the good guys, seriously, that's them. That's the apocalyptic doom. And if you think about it seriously, Magneto was the real villain of this. Magneto killed way more people in this movie than Apocalypse did, with his, you know, spiral magnets killing all whole, dropping cities and plowing under stuff. And he walks away. Oh, take care, my friend. I'll see you at our next. He just devastated all of like Delaware's population. But we're chill with Magneto. Meanwhile, Apocalypse can't even assemble a decent posse, and he's the villain. You know, it's just no. It was sad. I felt bad for Apocalypse.
See you later, my friend.
Remember the moment where Apocalypse sees, when he sees that, you know, Angel all tore up and on the ground, and he's like, oh, this is pathetic. That's how I felt. I'm sorry, Apocalypse. You deserve better, man. I mean, you were buried in a tomb.
He's the one who put like them MFs together, and they were... henchmen are never good.
And by the way, he went shopping at like the Merovingian's basement, right? He was just like, all right, what kind of guys you got in here? Oh, welcome, villain. Let's see who we have. Let me check the Rolodex. And holy crap, this is the best this dude can do.
He has been like dead. He probably thought that all of them were really cool because he's like didn't exist for like hundreds of years.
That's because this dummy picked the first villains he can find. You got the whole freaking planet, and you're really just going to walk into a basement and go, oh, yeah, who you got
on
town?
Well, you know, he thinks he's superior, so it doesn't matter. He thinks that anybody he comes across, he can automatically make superior than whatever, and they're going to be fine. So that was his blind sight.
Worst henchman ever. Yeah. I mean, he just... So we got that going on. Then you look on the hero side. So whose story was it? Whose story was this movie?
Magneto.
Was it Magneto or was it
Scott? Scott with the laser eyes.
Maybe it was Scott, or was it Mystique? Was it Mystique's movie? Because like we both agreed, she ended up being, quote, the hero in this.
Well, they kept saying it. I don't know if she actually was.
Well, yeah, she was. I mean, she was the hero previously, and she ended up being the hero in this one because she managed to get everybody together. Or was it the kids? Because it's the new generation that we're seeing here. And honestly, the kids were more interesting than anybody else in the film. And of course, they got like no screen time.
Quicksilver was cool.
That was the coolest part. Quicksilver was the coolest part of the movie, hands down.
Yeah.
And to have that Martha moment where Magneto is tearing up the planet, the end of the world is going on, Mystique's rolled up next to his bubble and is trying to talk him down because he believes he has absolutely no family left and therefore nothing left to live for. All he needed was one little hope, one little spark of light to keep him from killing everybody. And his son's just like, I just came here to see what was going on. I'm going to leave now. Why didn't he in that moment say, I am your son?
I don't know. Was really irritating.
That was just one of many irritating moments. But seriously, you know, I'm sitting here going, what are we doing? Why is this supposed, what are you saving this for? And oh, of course, let's not forget, I keep asking whose movie this is. Let's not forget Wolverine shows up.
They
literally just pulled him off of a shelf, pulled him out of a drawer somewhere, and he jumps out. And
that's how he was in First Class.
He
was just at a bar and he's like, go fuck yourself. And then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this has got to stop. So, you know what? And here's the real heart.
He was Weapon X. Woo!
Messenger. And because I know a little bit about the lore, once again, they're setting up another movie. His presence, pretty much his whole presence in this movie, is setting up something that's going to happen in Logan.
You know what I wish? You know what I wish, though? Because they showed him from like the chest up and he was shirtless. I thought when he ran off into the woods that he was going to be totally buck naked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He had on slacks.
Well, yeah, look, if it happens for the Hulk, it's going to happen to Wolverine.
I thought Hugh Jackman would be a little cheeky, if you know what I mean.
We've had some naked Wolverine already. Can we give it? Okay, but look, here's the other thing. So I was pretty angry with Apocalypse. I when this movie was over, I didn't know where to turn or who to blame. I'm like, this is just and you know what really messed me up?
What, baby?
They cut a scene from X-Men Apocalypse. You remember when what's his name? Cyclops and when Cyclops first meets Nightcrawler and Jean Grey, and they're like, you know what? We need to go to the mall. We need to go to the mall. Where do they keep the car around here? And the kids break out to go to the mall, right? Mm. They actually shot it when they went to the mall. Now, never mind the fact that it's hard. I have to remind people that this is set in the 80s because it was like everything was so discombobulated because you were in the Middle East. It felt like it was. Then we were in like the ancient times, and then we're just
you're
in
right a about that. Wasteland. You're right. I could not tell it was supposed to be in the 80s
that
for
was
a
supposed
long time.
To be in the 80s. Well, guess what? The scene where they go to the mall is. I can only describe it as adorable, or it was my favorite part of this movie.
So guys, let me tell you something about Carl. Carl has a really bizarre fascination with malls
and the 80s.
And the 80s, but malls is his like thing, like his precious.
I grew up in the mall.
I understand that, but it's a little much.
Yeah.
It's his one ring to rule them all. Freaking.
You say that now, and so I'm just going to simply point you to the link, and then you're going to watch it, and you're going to feel the same thing that I did, which is why the hell did they cut this scene out of the movie? Because oh my god, it is adorable. Never mind the fact that they kick in, they've got 80s music playing in the background, which just sets the frame so nicely. So you get to see, you finally feel, oh. We're in the 80s when this is going on. They're having fun. They're just playing around with each other. They're playing video games, and they're in the record store together, and they're bonding as a young team of X-Men.
I might not have enjoyed it.
Trust me. You say that, you just have to watch it. When you see it, you'd be like, damn. Because here's the other thing. We don't really – it's hard to get an idea of what people feel about the mutants. At this time, you know, when this, do people like mutants? Are they afraid of mutants? What was they're chilling in the mall. Big blue dude with the tails walking down. People are like, hey, what's up? They accept them. They accept all of the mutants in their various forms at the mall. Everybody's chilling. And to be able to see that in this moment, that not only are they getting along with each other and they're cool, that the world, or at least America, has come to accept mutants just like, oh, hey, man, what's up? At the mall, there's a scene where Nightcrawler goes into like a Foot Locker and he sees like some Jordans and he really, really wants to shoot. And there's a kid just watching him. And then he looks down and you know what Nightcrawler's feet look like. So it's just like, oh, man. Why they could not include those beautiful moments. It was light. It was fun. It was, oh, man. And there's this crack. There's this scene where Cyclops pulls out a Culture Club album. And he looks at it. And there's a big old picture of Boy George on it. And he looks at Boy George. And then he looks over at Jean Grey. And she's like, did anyone ever tell you that you two? And she does look like Boy George. It was hilarious. She got pissed. So it's this beautiful, beautiful moment. I'm telling you, you gotta go find this clip. You can find it on YouTube or Vimeo or something. It's beautiful. But there was just a fun, light sweetness about it that was completely missing from the entire film. And when you see that moment and what they were able to pull off in 3 minutes,
it doesn't fit.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. Because nothing about the movie fits. So don't tell me that because there's something halfway decent in it that it doesn't fit. Meanwhile, I'm sitting through X-Files, The Mummy, and Stargate in the first 10 minutes. But 3 minutes of actual character development? Because again, I'll ask you. Think about all the characters that we're supposed to see Quicksilver. Other than Quicksilver, as a generally new character, and we saw, you know, a bit of the budding romance that we all know between Jean Grey and Cyclops.
And a little bit of flirting with her and friggin' Wolverine. Didn't they have a thing?
But anyway. Yeah, yes, they did. But anyway.
I remember that, right?
But that's because you were remembering it from elsewhere, not necessarily what you saw in this movie. There was a sort of little unlocking. But the point is it was just a mess. It was a mess. Apocalypse.
It sounds like you like this.
This what part of this? I like the 3 minutes that they took out of the movie. I like that. And I will admit, Quicksilver scene was just well. See, Quicksilver is always awesome in these movies. But man, that one scene with him saving everybody
that was nice.
That could have been the movie just by itself. Seriously, if I had just paid to see that. I'd have felt better, but I had to be assaulted by the worst villains ever and Olivia Munn in an ill-fitting costume from a convention.
I have to look at it again. I didn't think their costume was that bad. I thought it fit her great. Like it was on her legs. It was strappy and it fit on her legs, right? I don't know. What I'm disappointed about is that you couldn't really tell this was the 80s. Now we've seen 80s done right, right? Yep. We've seen Stranger Things. We've seen the one episode in Black Mirror. Yes.
Yeah.
Something with a mirror. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've seen these type of nostalgia things. And so what I thought is that they were a very subdued 80s where I don't know where they were because no 80s characters looked that subdued and classy.
Only reason we know it was the 80s other than the scene that they cut out and didn't show us, is that we had Eurythmics playing in the background of Quicksilver scene.
Yeah, that's when I was like, okay. Because I knew their hair looked weird, but it just didn't connect to me. Like, why does his hair look terrible?
Half of these people are mutants, so you can't tell if they're punk or if they're mutants or not.
Right. Yeah, I just couldn't tell if they were just not stylish, if that was... Because, I mean, I feel like dudes' hair look like that right now, so I couldn't really tell if... Yeah. I think their doing of the 80s was way too generous. The shoulder pads weren't big enough. Whatever just wasn't 80s enough. And I'm kind of glad because I'm getting a little nostalgia fatigue here.
Well, so, like I said, watch the 3 minutes and then you'll see. It could have been a really beautiful thing and they just did not take advantage of it.
I don't know. You like this film.
Stop this insanity. Okay, I was so glad it was over.
That's fine. We talked about that way longer than I thought we would.
Well, in my opinion, it was one of the greater turds of 2016. It really.
That a turd, all right.
I do.
That's fine.
That's fine. So we're going to move on and talk about some other ones. This one, Ghostbusters.
All right. Yes.
About so if you don't know Carl and you didn't follow Sci-Fi Party Line, oh, say 2 years ago, it was before that. I did not witness this, but I saw on pictures and various videos, Carl, the genius that he is, built himself a Ghostbusters costume complete with a proton pack. And this proton pack, let me tell you guys, this is the real deal, right? And so this kind of informed me what type of Ghostbusters fan Carl is. But this guy is not subtle about his Ghostbustering. This man is a Ghostbuster for life. So when this new film came out and we heard how they were going to do it with all women, I just needed to know how Carl felt about this film. And guess what? I still don't know because we haven't talked about it. So he has kept his opinion from me for a really long time, or I've avoided it. I'm not really sure. And he's just not really made it known. So we're going to get into this is like a mystery. And I want to know, I guess first I'll let you know, Carl, that I actually thought it was pretty funny. I enjoyed it. I thought it was likable and fun. I thought it added to the whole franchise. I thought Christopher Hemsworth, I forgot he was in it. And when I saw him in it, I was just like, oh yeah, they put him in there because he's like the blonde secretary, you know? And he was like stereotypically stupid, but it worked in a weird, bizarre way in his sort of awkward way that he does. Because he does have a little bit of a comedic timing that we don't really notice at times because he's shirtless on Thor being manly and those. I don't know. I enjoyed it. Was a lot of fun. It was nice to have a little bit of girl power. I just don't know how other people felt about it, except for the people who hated it before it came out because of the print, because they used all women. So now that I've got that out, let's hear the Carl.
All right. So the first thing that is not entirely fair that you're going to have to understand is, and you're right, I built my own proton pack for Ghostbusters. The very first time I saw the preview for the first Ghostbusters movie, it was the scene. I was watching it with Siskel and Ebert, and it is the scene where the boys step out of the elevator in the hotel and the cleaning lady is walking and they turn and they fire the proton pack and toast the toilet paper, toast a rack, just blow up the cart. When I saw that scene, the first thing that got my attention were the proton packs. They were, every once in a while in a sci-fi film, you'll see a device, a gadget, a weapon, like the lightsaber, like, you know, that darn glaive from Krull. There are these things that are just, it's like the out of time machine. There are these things that for whatever reason, the device grabs you. And it is just something so very real and magical about it. I didn't even care what the movie was about at that point. I was like, holy crap. The effect, the sound it made, the way that it looked, how real it looked. I said, I have got to see this movie. I love the proton packs. And it just so happened, incidentally, that the movie was hilarious and the guys were fun and everything else around. It's not fair. I'm an engineer. I'm kind of geeky that way. I love the proton packs. So if you recall, the proton pack that I built didn't look exactly like the ones that you saw in the movie.
It looked good enough.
Mine was a modern take on it. I said, I love the proton packs, but it's been, at the time I built it, 20 years since the original Ghostbusters. I want to imagine what like an up-to-date modern version of the proton pack would look like. And that's what I built. It had, you know, big old plasma plate in it and all the other stuff. Because I, as much as I love the original proton pack, I couldn't wait to see what an updated version of it would look like. Because, I mean, with the technology and the effects, I was like, oh, my God. So when I heard that they were going to make a new Ghostbusters film, the first thing, I was like, oh, they're going to make a new proton pack. Finally, I'm going to get to see what the new generation of the proton pack looks like. I can't wait. And yeah, they said, okay, we're going to show everybody. Here's what the proton packs look like. You know, they snuck it out in some old, you know, raggedy film or whatever. And I looked at it, and it looked like the back of a mini fridge. I said, what the hell is that? The proton packs looked horrible.
Aww.
And I said, okay, all right, I'm going to look past this. I'm going to look past, I said, you know, maybe that's just like the prototype. And later in the film, they get cooler. Like, you know, they make a better one or just whatever. I hated the proton packs in Ghostbusters, which was the first strike. Now, the fact that they were all women was not really such a big deal. I was open to the idea of that. Kristen Wiig, she's not my favorite. And I watched Saturday Night Live for many, many years. She has a certain, you know, comedic timing. There's, you know, I get it, but it's not my favorite. I like Melissa McCarthy a lot. Kate McKinnon was my favorite She was my favorite. And Leslie Jones, my only problem with Leslie Jones is, you know right away what her comedy style is going to be. You just because she's got the same kind of character in all of the sketches on Saturday Night Live. So when I heard that she was going to be the fourth of the Ghostbusters in the movie, I was like, okay, I know where this is going. I know, you know, how they're going to use her in this film. So I kind of went into it just kind of, you know, lukewarm, okay. The effects were spectacular in the movie.
Carl.
Yeah, it started slow, but the ending, you know, one of the things that I really liked the most about Ghostbusters was it started small and all garage bandy, and I'm talking about the original Ghostbusters, all garage bandy, and these guys, they're just barely, there's no way they're going to actually get anything done. And the scale of what they have to deal with at the end is so huge. It is so ridiculous. There's no way that they're going to be able to do it, and somehow they pull it off. They kept that kind of an arc in this movie. The way it ended was big, and it was pretty, and it was big, and it was interesting. And it was big. So in that way, it kept some of the tradition of the original Ghostbuster movie. And that was good. Like I said, it was hit and miss with the ladies because, again, I really, really liked Kate McKinnon's character. And Melissa McCarthy was very funny. I thought they were strong in this and I liked them. But Leslie, you know, I think she's great and all. But for in the Ghostbusters film, I don't know if she should have done something a little bit different, or if it.
Okay, and not to cut you off, weren't they all of them brainy?
Yeah, they're all Saturday. They're all Saturday Night Live.
No. I'm talking about the guys. Weren't they all brainy?
Not really. I'll put it this way.
I forgot it's been a while. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bill Murray was sort of Brady, but he was so undisciplined that he just kind of tried to get away with stuff. And then, of course, you know, you had Winston come along, who was not one of the founding scientists. So in terms of his abilities, it kind of mapped what Leslie was capable of doing.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get to.
I'm not faulting her for not being a scientist. Some people made a big noise about that. Nah, I don't care about that either. This is just about how the characters played against each other. Something didn't quite mesh to me with Kristen Wiig and Leslie in this. Like, you know who I would have liked to have seen? I mean, again, I wasn't thrilled with Leslie Jones' character. Like, how she acted in this. But as a fourth Ghostbuster, do you know who I think would have worked? If you're going to stick with Saturday Night Live.
Eddie Murphy.
I'm talking about a woman.
Kidding.
Maya Rudolph would have been a fun fourth Ghostbuster. I don't know why they didn't find her. She is crazy. And in a way that's unpredictable. She has
like Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig are kind of the same person.
No.
I feel like they have the same comedic.
No. Because Maya Rudolph is very character. Like, I mean, she can become different character. Kristen Wiig has this sort of like a Jim Carrey edge to her, where her strangeness is what's funny, but Maya Rudolph can become characters.
No.
You know, she can become these different people, and to see who she would have become in this movie could have been very fun. And but anyway, it was okay. I was pleasantly surprised. So I left this movie and I was like, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. Yeah. It was better than I thought. And mostly because of the characters that I did like.
What do you think about Christopher Hemsworth?
I know what they were trying to do with him, but I was like, whatever, man.
You didn't like his dance scene? I thought it was spectacular.
Yeah, no, I was not a huge fan of that. I was not a huge fan. I had honestly blocked it out until you brought it back. Like, oh, crap, that was in there. Oh, the dance scene. So with all the noise that I had heard ahead of time going into it, and of course my immediate, before I'd even seen the movie, disappointment with the proton packs, I went in kind of reserved. And the other thing that really disappointed me, with the exception of Winston, the cameos were ridiculous. Why?
You weren't excited about the cameos?
No, just putting them in the movie is not enough. They have to make sense in the movie. And what they did
Winston made sense.
That's what I'm saying. His was the only cameo that actually kind of felt like a passing of the baton, and that made sense. Why they did that with Bill Murray as the art critic guy? The cab thing they did with Dan Aykroyd? Why? They were totally unnecessary cameo, and that's what really, really, really hurt. Because when you're watching it, as a fan of the original series and as a fan of the original characters, you want one of two things. You want to see the characters that you know in this movie somehow connected. Like, you know, they could have been the retired guys. They could have passed on the plans to the packs. They could have, you know, come in at the last minute and helped them out or something. You either want to see that, or you want to see them in as totally unrelated, you know, background like cameos that lean in and do something kind of funny. I think they were trying for the second one, but how are you going to have these guys be in there and not be funny? They weren't funny. They were really superfluous, and so to put them in there, you're like, it brings up the pain of the fact that they're not involved in it, and rewards you with absolutely none of the nostalgia or of the joy of why you like them. I have no idea what they were doing with these cameos. Again, Winston was the only one that made a flake of sense that actually kind of, I was like, oh, I feel something when I see him. I feel something.
That was at the end, though.
And that was at the complete end, the absolute end. So that was just.
I didn't really get that. It could have been better. It wasn't the best. It had problems at the box office. It was had a budget of $144 million. Opening weekend was $46 million. It only made $128 million, and it lost money.
Well, domestically, how to do international?
Internationally, it went with $229 million.
Wow, only? Jeez.
Yeah, so, I think a lot of people trashed it, and so a lot of people just didn't bother, and a lot of people did. And I don't know, I think
they tried too hard to do something with it that maybe they should have done something else. I don't know.
I'm not quite sure what they were going for. I mean, there, like I said, there was a spirit of the original movie, and actually, yes, something of the real Ghostbusters cartoon from the 80s and 90s. There was a, you know, a cartoon Ghostbusters, which is actually very good. If fans of Ghostbusters, check it out. It was silly, but even actually, maybe that's what they were trying to do with the proton packs. The proton packs kind of hinted at the ones that were in the cartoon, but still, so the story that we got in this movie, you know, with the big fall of the city and all that, it felt a lot like what they did with one of the Ghostbusters cartoons. And so there was a bit of that nostalgia in there, but it's not enough. It wasn't enough for what they were trying to do here. And with the budget and the scale of what they had to achieve, you don't go tipping it, you know, dabbing into an 80s cartoon to save a film like that. It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough.
Oh, I'm sorry, Carl. I wish he would have done better. Maybe, I mean, they shouldn't have messed with it. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know what could have made it better. But it felt like some things were trying too hard. But to me, I do agree with you that it did have the spirit overall. Yeah. But it could have been better. So, you know what, guys? We're going to take another break. We're going to break this up one more time for you, and we're going to break it into three pieces, the trinity of the turtle. And
holy crap. Is that how we're doing this?
That's this. This is the trinity. We're going to break this one off, and we're going to come back to you with the third.
Did you say break this one off? Break this turtle off is what you're telling me. Is that what you're saying? Oh, my God.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with our final few movies. And we're gonna release the turds to you, the names of them, and we're gonna wrap this up. We're gonna get off the pot.
Let's drop this load.
So give us a call, 773-336-2686.
Everyone.
Yeah, go to the website. This is 2016, and you got to get it all out, Carl. We got to flex the system, you know? SciFiPartyLine.com, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, iTunes, that stuff. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at the party next time.
All right, bye.